It's three tales of heartbreak and woe for us on this week's NFL Only Better. As I discuss my betting highs and low on Sunday, Mike chats about how the butler just isn't cutting it these days, and poor John has to talk about the Browns' weekly loss. But we'll cheer up. It's NFL Only Better.
My favorite one. I always say the next one.
You cannot be serious! That ball was on the line!
Yes, hello, and welcome to NFL Only Better every Wednesday right here on the Betfair Podcast Network, of course. And you can subscribe to the channel, comment on anything that you want to hear. We will get back to you and we will make changes based on the show that you want. A reminder, Tuesdays is cricket, Wednesdays is NFL, Thursdays is football, and Fridays now is racing. And another quick update, this is of course the start tomorrow of Responsible Gambling Week. So as we speak about all of the bets and all, it is important to remember, of course, to always gamble responsibly, please. Hopefully you will enjoy the show today. Joining me is John Balfe, who is a freelance journalist concentrating a lot on NFL. John?
Hello, Kieran. How are you?
Thank
nice
you for
to see you this morning.
No problem at all. I do look great. I assumed you were going to say thank you. That's why I said no problem. And joining me is on the line is our NFL expert, really. It is Mike Carson. Mike, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I mean, there's this strange thing in the sky called the sun, which doesn't appear very often. Although I have to say that someone at the NFL must have sold something to the gods of football or the gods of weather or both, because all four games had decent weather. A couple of times it was really nice in London, and each time it came completely out of the gray. I was going to say out of the blue, but there was no blue. It was like horrible weeks, and then all of a sudden on Sunday the sun came out. We had really good weather for the game, so that was lucky. Because especially at Wembley, where if it does rain too much, the field gets kind of slippery, and it did for the third game. But the day itself was nice, and then it was great at Wembley. It was great at Wembley on Sunday.
Yeah, no, it did look nice, all right, on the TV. We didn't get to go. We didn't get to sit in the BBC box and chat to the lads. And
yeah, maybe next year, Kieran. Maybe next year.
Oh, I've got my doubts.
You should have seen. You should have seen the crowd gathered after the game and chanting OC, and I went out and distributed or threw into the crowd like those guys who shoot the T-shirts into crowds in America. My Minshew mustaches, because I brought one to wear, but the producer had brought one for everybody to wear, or a lot of them actually. And the guys decided they didn't want to wear it. They thought it'd be better if it was just me being the clown. And so I went out afterwards. I was throwing the Minshew mustaches to the crowd.
That's not wanting to wear the Minshew mustache. I think that's a rather fetching mustache, if I
well, they were
say
going,
so myself.
They were going pretty cheap after his performance. So.
Ooh, I see what you did there, Kieran.
That's, dig.
That's true. Apparently Doug Marrone has made the switch now for the bye week, and Nick Foles will be the starting quarterback in week 11.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into what we get wrong, are you surprised a little bit at that, John?
I mean, yeah, a little bit, I suppose. But, I mean, it's Nick Foles, and they... Oh, I just dropped something there. It's Nick Foles, and he was their big acquisition in the offseason. And he got injured, I think, after something like 12 snaps or something of the opening game. And Minshew has done fantastically well. And like we said, he's got a great mustache. And he's one of the candidates for Rookie of the Year, or Offensive Rookie of the Year, at least. But, I mean, once Foles... getting Foles fit was the plan all along. And now that he's fit, presumably, you have to put him into the team.
Are you surprised, Mike?
A little bit, because the safe thing to do would be to stick with Minshew and then bring Foles in if he falters. And that way you have less controversy. But based on the game that he played, and you had to think that Houston's defensive game plan was based quite a bit on confusing him. Also on beating up the Jacksonville offensive line, which they did very well. But, they were switching their coverages at the last second all the time to try to confuse him. He's done remarkably well for a sixth-round rookie. He's arguably been the best rookie quarterback in the league so far. We'll see what Ryan Finley does for the Bengals this week. But I think that they've gone about as far with him as they can go at the moment. what John was saying is absolutely right. Foles, they brought in, they didn't trade him when people were saying, oh, they've got to trade Foles now because Minshew's the quarterback of the future. Foles is the quarterback of the future. He's an injury-prone quarterback. It will be really good for Minshew now to sit back and learn and watch after what he's seen playing. And they're in a good position either way they do it. So now Foles goes out and plays. Maybe they get better. If he gets hurt again or if he plays badly, Minshew's there and they know they can trust him to play. So it's win-win.
Absolutely. Now, look, let's just look back at what we did. I think in my mind, when we all agreed on the best bet of the weekend, I feared for it. And it came to pass that it was not a winning bet, unfortunately, with the 49ers who came up. I mean, they won the game, but obviously didn't cover the spread because the Cardinals really got it together and pushed them for very long periods. However, for people who did listen to the whole show, we were quite keen on other things. And one of the big bets, I suppose, that we would have said is we were keen on the Ravens at 13-8 flat to win the game. And that one came in. So a good and a bad week. And Mike, I had a look, as I always do, through your column on Fridays on Betfair. Your best bet won, didn't it? Two of the three?
I actually had two of the three. I had all three. The only one that didn't hit was I suggested also my best bet was Eagles against the Bears.
That's right.
The Bears getting 4.5. And then I said I really liked going with the first half under in that game, which was 20.5, and that was obviously easy as well, since the Bears didn't bother to score until the second half. They only had 9 yards of total offense in the first half. I had Seattle against Tampa. Now, that's a bad beat for people who took Tampa, because had Seattle kicked the winning field goal when time expired, they would have covered. Tampa would have covered. I would have been wrong. But Jason Myers missed the kick. It went to overtime. Seattle got the touchdown, and therefore they covered. So that was right. Although I had also thought that game would go under 52.5, and it went over. And then my outside bet, which could have been the value bet because it was 11-10 or was it 13-10? Kansas City to win outright against the Vikings, which they did. And if you didn't have if you didn't have the guts to take them outright and you took the points, you won that as well.
Yeah, they would have been 13-10 because it was a 3-point spread. I got involved with that.
Yeah, which I thought was given the spread, I might as well take the Chiefs with such nice odds. And it turned out to be a good value.
Actually, I think it might have been 6. I'm pretty sure actually now. Sorry,
six in that one.
6 was Kansas, yeah. So you mentioned bad beats there. There was a couple actually. Colt Steelers had a 2-point spread, which of course, if you were on the Colts, would have won if the field goal had been kicked, and because it wasn't, it ended up being a push for most people. Packers at Chargers is not really a heartbreak story, but I guess the one thing to take away from that, guys, was
that was just a bizarre. I didn't see that one coming.
The Chargers,
I absolutely picked opposite on that one.
If you got involved with the Packers in any way, shape, or form,
yeah,
it was done, gone straight off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Up to that game, I think Green Bay were averaging 32.5 points a game, and then they go up and give us 11 in that one. So that was a very surprising one, particularly given, I mean, we were waxing lyrical just this day last week on the podcast talking about Aaron Rodgers. We wouldn't be the first people to do that, obviously, but it seemed like the wheels came off the carriage ever so slightly there last weekend.
Rodgers had no downfield passing at all.
It was very bizarre.
The weirdest thing was that the Chargers all of a sudden had a run game.
Yeah, that was another thing we were talking about last week. Was like I think both Kieran and I quoted statistics about Melvin Gordon not getting it done. I don't think he didn't get a touchdown, but he rushed for 120 plus yards last week.
He looked like the old Melvin Gordon. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, actually, he rushed for 80 yards, and he got two 1-yard touchdowns.
Oh, is that right? Okay,
I prefer the 2 1-yard touchdowns.
But he and Eckler, and they even gave a couple of carries to Jackson. They combined for like 100, almost 160 yards.
Wow.
And they controlled the time of possession. You know, Green Bay had nothing. The Chargers more than doubled the overall yardage, almost doubled the first downs, 36-24 in possession. Now this makes the Chargers Monday night game a real head scratcher now, because like what Chargers are going to show up in Oakland?
Yeah, absolutely. That is going to be an odd one. I'm thinking here about telling you my heartbreak story.
Yeah, just for the listeners to give a note here, but Kieran sends out notes or like talking points each week of what we're going to discuss on the podcast.
Takes.
Hot takes, if you want. And one bullet point, which is just simply listed as Kieran's heartbreak story. So buckle up, everybody. Settle down. Pour yourself a whiskey.
It won't take too long.
I was an innocent young lad coming to Dublin for the country.
Well, he wasn't innocent, I'll tell you that much. I went to college with this boy.
So what happened is that I did a treble on the 6 o'clock games, which was the Colts minus two, I believe. No, Colts plus two, excuse me. And then I backed the Jets, and I took Mike's best bet as well, which I always do, which was Philadelphia. So Philadelphia won, the Jets won, or the Miami Dolphins won. It was that game, it was the Jets game. And there was a field goal to make the treble click, which was missed. Steelers won, but it turned out to be a push. So I did technically win, but I only got half the profit. So that was hurtful for me. So we then went on into the later games, and I wasn't going to get involved too much, but Seattle went behind, and they went out to 3-1 in play. And I thought to myself, that'd be good to get involved in. That's a nice price.
Bit of value there.
So I backed Seattle at 3-1. Now that won. So we go into the later games, the half-one kick game, and I was looking at it and I was saying, it's interesting. I really fancy Ravens, but I'm probably not going to stay up and watch the whole thing. I'll record the second half or something.
Sure.
So I actually saw, they were 6-4 to win the first quarter. So I backed them to win the first quarter and they won that. So we're going into the second quarter now. Now here's where the kicker comes. And this is really a kicker, right? And you may not feel it as much as I felt it as I tell the story. But what happened is I noticed how much the Ravens were running the ball and how much the Patriots just weren't able to deal with it.
Yeah.
So I looked at next touchdown markets, and Mark Ingram was 10-1 to get the next touchdown. So I put a little bit of money on that, enough money for me to go, if this wins, we're off to Disneyland, baby. So the next play, Mark Ingram, it goes 51 yards. He goes from almost halfway to the 11-yard line. He cuts in at one stage, and I think he's going to score. Mm-hmm. And the Patriots tackles him right at the end line. As they're showing a replay of that, the Ravens hustle, get to the line, and they run it in. And there was a brief second where I didn't know which running back it was. And because of the stature of both men, Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards, they is only a, one is 5'10", one is 6, 238 pounds, 210, have similar statures, height,
sure,
similar jersey numbers. I had, for what could be described as two glorious seconds, believed that Mark Ingram had run in until the commentators went, touchdown for Edwards! At which point, I collapsed to the ground.
Yeah.
And realized Disneyland was fading. Mickey Mouse faded into the background.
So you probably needed one of those oxygen masks that probably gave to Ingram after his 51-yard run, huh?
Is that what you think? Because I just couldn't watch it for about 3 minutes. I really thought he scored a touchdown.
That is quite heartbreaking, Kieran. How are you doing now? Have you?
Now, obviously, I can tell the story, so that's the first part, you know. But look, these are the way it goes. But yes, that's
a bad beat. Let's be honest, that's a bad beat.
That is, yeah. That's a bad beat of the season. Look, let's talk that game before we get into anything else. Mike, what did you think about how the Ravens took apart the Patriots in the early stages of that game?
Yeah, you know, I wrote my Patreon column, which comes out on Fridays, apart from the Thursday game, which comes out on Thursdays at patreon.com. And when I wrote it, it led up to my picking the Ravens. And just as I was writing pick, a little voice in the back of my head, which sounded a lot like Bill Belichick mumbling into the microphone, said, you know, I've got something planned for these guys and we're going to be able to take them. So I picked the Patriots. This is just straight up. And with great regret, I almost went back and changed it on Saturday. And it didn't surprise me at all because the Ravens did exactly what you would expect them to do to the Patriots. And they were physical with them on both sides of the ball. They won the battle of the line of scrimmage pretty much. And the interesting thing was, at halftime, I thought, you know, this could be a lot worse given how much they've been outplayed. And then the Patriots come out and they go down the field and they're moving the ball and they're going to take the lead. And Julian Edelman fumbles and it's run in for a touchdown by Humphrey. And at that point, I realized, you know, they weren't going to pull this game out because the Ravens are a tough team to come back on because they can hold the ball for so long and eat up so much clock on you. But I think the Patriots will go away from this knowing what they need to do better. Some of that is going to be hard for them to adjust because they just aren't that big and tough up front. They tend to play a lot of two-man lines with four linebackers, and that's bad against that big offensive line. The extra blockers they put in, they run these power formations like old-time NFL. That's going to be difficult for them. But offensively, if N'Keal Harry, the rookie, comes back after the bye week this week and plays well, it will at least give them another passing threat. And when you consider, you know, that they've already gone through Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown this season, you know, they've picked up Mohamed Sanu, which is good. He played well against Baltimore. But, you know, if they had been able to hang on to Brown and Gordon, they would have Gordon, Brown, Edelman, and Harry coming out of the bye, and no Sanu, and people would be saying, how are we going to cover all these guys? So I think they need to adjust. But what it did show you, I think, above everything else, is that if you let the Ravens play their game, they're a very dangerous team, and the Patriots do not have the offensive line to cope with a big physical defense.
John, you had something to add. That's why I stepped away from the mic. Apologies, people.
You're the host, Kieran. No, I think I watched, I didn't actually watch this game live, but I was watching some of the earlier games on Sunday with a friend of mine who's a big Patriots supporter, and he was making the point. He was obviously talking about how this is going to be a difficult game for the Patriots to win. The Ravens are a good running unit. And his prediction was that the Patriots would try, and as Mike was kind of alluding to as well, but limit the amount of ball that that Baltimore are able to have. Kind of like they did to the Chiefs last season in the playoffs, like just restrict them from having the ball, and then obviously that's if offense is the best form of defense in that regard. But when you look at the numbers of this, Baltimore had the ball for 37 minutes and a second to the Patriots 23 minutes, and that's not going to work, particularly with the. It seems like the deficiency in this Patriots defense is the power running game, and I mean there's a few better teams in the league doing that than Baltimore.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I noticed in the game, if the Patriots were going to win like that, then you can't have any mistakes. And on the first drive, they had a very un-Patriot-like mistake where there was a neutral zone infringement, which gave it a... It was fourth and goal, but it was 2 yards or something to get a first down. And they were about to kick a field goal, and they jumped. I mean, Belichick was raging about that. You could see. I won't say on the air what he obviously was mouthing down to the
heck
to the coordinators.
Yeah, it was funny because it was Jamie Collins, and you know they let Collins go a few years ago, basically because he was too undisciplined a player, and that's the kind of thing that just kills you. You know, they've chewed you up, and you've held them to a field goal, and then it turns into a touchdown.
Yeah, no, that was pretty bad. And then obviously the fumble by Edelman. And there was just other little bits and bobs that affect the Patriots. And look, it's very easy. If you watch the games, the commentators are saying it. The journalists are saying it. Mike's saying it. Patriots have a problem at wide receiver. They don't have a natural star. They're relying on Julian Edelman, who realistically they shouldn't be relying on anymore.
Yeah.
He's a slot receiver. They had always great guns. They had great players. I'm not necessarily sure they have at the moment. But I mean, they'll get to the playoffs and they'll be dangerous. We could literally be sitting here the last week of January talking about the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Oh, there's a very good chance that's going to happen.
So let's move on from the Patriots. Quick question to both of you guys. MVP chat, of course, with Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson's performances over the last couple of weeks. It's Messi versus Ronaldo. But John, if right now, who's playing better?
Oh, they're both playing fantastically, isn't it? And it's interesting to see. I've always been kind of a fan of of the concept of a dual threat quarterback. It's just it's entertaining to me if you know that the run option is there for him as well. And Lamar, Russell Wilson hasn't really been doing that so much in the last couple of seasons, but he's got it in his locker if need be. But Lamar Jackson just brings so much more to this Baltimore offense. And he's improving as a passer, and he's obviously improving as a runner as well. So I think... And another statistic I saw about this, but just going back to the Patriots game for 1 second, the Baltimore versus New England game, Lamar Jackson is now the youngest quarterback to beat a Bill Belichick coached side since 2004.
Ooh. That's a good one.
Yeah, so we're going back 16 or so years on that one. So I think that's very impressive. And that just speaks that this guy is for real. And isn't it interesting as well that in last year's much lauded draft with I think there was 5 quarterbacks selected in the first round, Jackson was the last one. And you could argue that he is the, certainly this season, he's the best one in terms of performances.
Certainly is. Yeah. And the Ravens, it wasn't like the Ravens targeted him either. They, you know, they traded back into the first round when they realized he was still available with the last pick of the first round. So I was trying to, honestly speaking, I had him ranked 4th of the 5 quarterbacks who went in the first round last year. But that was better than a lot of the mouth clowns on Sports Talk had him, because most of them, you know, some of them, and some like Bill Polian, who was the Colts general manager, Bill's general manager, you know, was saying he has to play wide receiver in the NFL. He can't play quarterback. Yeah. And I just said, God, you haven't been watching his film, you know? Just to answer the quick question, I still like Russell Wilson in this one. And of course, MVP is a lot dependent on how the team does around you. And these two teams are very similar in a way. They both want to be run first teams. They both want to be big and physical defensively, and neither is quite as good as they seem. But the Ravens are getting pieces back in their secondary, which will make them better. I think you need to add Deshaun Watson to this chat.
And Matt Stafford.
If Houston can have a well, Stafford's not going to come out with a winning team, so I don't think he's even going to figure in. And to be honest, I think some of that falls on Stafford. I don't see him as an MVP. But Watson, if the Texans continue, you know, to win and win that division, and even, you know, I think Watson's going to be a real contender for the same reasons as Wilson or Jackson. You know, he just tired out the Jacksonville defense trying to catch him. Yeah. And like Wilson, he's got the better downfield arm. I think Jackson's downfield arm is the one drawback on him. And teams are going to look at the Ravens and say the way to beat them is to keep him in the pocket. The question is, how do you do that? Because Jackson is just quicksilver when he's scrambling around.
Yeah, I think we have, Mike, just interesting that you both brought up Matthew Stafford there, because we've one listener who was getting in touch with the show, and he thinks that Stafford is a genuine MVP contender. Now, I take your point about the record of the team and the overall performances of what he's actually producing on the scoreboard. But if you look at his individual statistics in terms of completions and yards thrown and everything like this, they are some pretty good numbers. So, Mike, does it come down to you that if the Lions just had a better record this year, a better win-loss record, that Stafford's chances of being MVP would be improved?
Obviously, they would, but partly if they had a better record, it would partly be because Stafford was being more efficient for whole games. They tend to score in bursts, often early in games, and then not really adjust so well. And he's doing a lot of it himself. I take that argument, you know, especially with Kerryon Johnson out, the running back. But, you know, I look at Jason Bell said that when we were discussing MVPs on Sunday on the show. He said Matt Stafford, he's balling. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Matt Stafford, to me, it's like Philip Rivers. It's like boom and bust. And I just don't see the consistency there to get him to the MVP. And you know, you can be the best player on a 4-12 team and not and certainly not get any consideration for MVP, because there was a famous baseball story about Ralph Kiner, who was a slugger for the Pittsburgh Pirates when they were terrible in the 40s, and he had a tremendous season. Might have even won the Triple Crown, and he went in asking for a raise. And the general manager, I think was Branch Rickey, said to him, "We finished last with you. We can finish last without you."
Just for a record, that wasn't me, by the way. That was that sent in the thing about Matt Stafford.
Why would you be sending questions to the show that you host?
No. I was the person who said it last week. And just on the price update, by the way, Russell Wilson's 3-1. Lamar Jackson's 3-1. Deshaun Watson's 11-2. Aaron Rodgers is 11-2 as well, and then it's double figure prices the rest. That includes poor old Matt Stafford, who's actually quite a large price.
Do you have any numbers for the first non-quarterback on there? Is there anyone even listed?
It would be McCaffrey, I would imagine.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Indeed, yeah. He's 16s. Dalvin Cook, 30s.
Any defensive players?
Stafford is 50s. So ooh, probably should stop shouting about this from the from the rooftops. Look, before we look at the games that are on Sky, it's time for what is now our weekly look, Kieran, at how the Browns lost. So it's time,
be careful.
It's time to hand over to our weekly Browns segment, brought to you by disappointment. Disappointment. The feeling when you realize that your season's going to be as shit this year, yeah, as it was last year.
Well, I mean, there's a reason they call the Browns Stadium the factory of sadness. So let's be honest. It's not been a fantastic first eight games, including a bye week. Let's be honest there. 2-6.
You can't lose on a bye week. Baker Mayfield looked after the game.
And he doesn't even have the best mustache in the league anymore.
That's true. He looked like someone in an 80s movie that had been home, that some reckless billionaires had traded places with him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Ferris Bueller Part 2 or something.
He looked like a man that was hurt.
Well,
did they lose to the bye week?
They'd find a way. They'd find a way.
Mike, were you surprised at that? Because I genuinely thought that they'd kind of get their season back on track a little bit at Denver. You know, a new quarterback coming in. I know it was in Denver, and there can be issues when you play in Denver. But with what they have, and I mean, on paper, Odell Beckham, you know, Nick Chubb, Landry, Baker Mayfield, they should be doing better, shouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. But it's not right now. They don't look like a team. You know, they don't look like everybody's on the same page. I don't know if that's Freddie Kitchen's fault. But you know, they brought in some big names who are also, what would you call them? Big characters, to put it nicely. And I'm not sure that they're able to keep those egos under control. And, you know, they lost that game. It was such an amazing loss because they outplayed, they basically outplayed Denver for most of the game in most ways, apart from, you know, Philip Lindsay making a couple of big runs and then Noah Fant, the rookie tight end, catching a short pass and basically running over Jermaine Whitehead, mm-hmm, and getting the touchdown. And Whitehead's no longer with the Browns because I think he responded kind of badly on Twitter to people who were suggesting that he probably could have tried a little harder to make that tackle or whatever. You know, this just seems to me to be a time where you need to reset. And you need to go back to what made Kitchens and Mayfield and Chubb effective in the second half of last year. And I suspect that part of the problem is that Freddie Kitchens is now the head coach, not the offensive coordinator. And it's I don't want to say it's all too much, but it's a whole lot more to worry about and think about than when you're just the offensive coordinator. And I don't think he's got everybody on the same page offensively as to what he wants to do with Baker Mayfield, and he doesn't have the tackles to do what he really wants to do, which would be a lot of the play action and Mayfield outside the pocket. And of course, when your tackles are the weak point of your line, it's hard to protect a quarterback as he moves right behind the tackles.
John, I was listening intently to that. Were you?
Of course, yeah, of course.
Like, I know it can be hard. I know, maybe sometimes when we hear things we don't want to hear, we tune out.
Fair enough, Kieran. But I think
I've been on many dates.
Yeah. it's interesting to see, like, speaking about...
Not another heart story.
But, with Freddie Kitchens last year just being the offensive coordinator, this year he's obviously the head coach, and he's play calling, despite Todd Monken being in there in the official OC job. So is there an argument to be saying he's biting off a little bit more than he can chew, or is he just trying to completely rehash whatever worked last year without any adjustment to what the pieces in the puzzle are this year? Remains to be seen. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. Like, they're going to win a few more games this season, I think. I mean, they've got two games against the Bengals. Like I said, they've got the Dolphins. They've got a couple of games against the Steelers. Those are all winnable affairs. And even this weekend, they're playing the Bills. I think that's not a direct loss right there. I think the Bills at 6-2 are... They're not as big a lock as you might think of those two records facing each other. I'll say that much.
Well, we'll see how the NFL's version of Firefest gets on in the next couple of weeks.
Come on.
Guys, let's look at the games taking place this weekend live in the box. We won't concentrate on the 6 o'clock game that's on the telly too much, if you ask me. I know Sky probably have some thing that they have to show a lot of the games or all of the teams, etc. But Cardinals at Tampa Bay does not look like the pick, especially when I actually see the Falcons are playing the Saints. I mean, that's a game I would watch for sure. So there is a 4.5-point spread. Arizona Cardinals at Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
You know, can I just criticize that for a moment?
Yeah, of course.
Because the Falcons Saints is going to be a one-sided, you know, mess. And the Cardinals Bucks could actually be an interesting game, especially, you know, it's sort of Bruce Arians' bowl because he's coached both teams. But the Cardinals, that both these teams have good defenses, and the Cardinals is better, I think, than the Bucks defense. But you know, the Bucks played pretty well up against Seattle last week, and we're in position to actually win that game, strangely enough. It took a big comeback in the second half to take it into overtime for Seattle, and you know, they did win it. But Arizona on the road is not necessarily that good. But remember, they played San Francisco tough as well at home on Thursday night. So you've got two teams coming off of good losses and both needing, obviously everybody needs to win, but you know, but both really needing a win to turn the season around from a real disappointment. Oh, excuse me. I'm getting so excited at this. To turn it around from a real disappointment. I think this could be a really interesting game.
Well, hope springs eternal with Mike. Yeah, yeah. I you say
I don't
two
want to have to pick it, strangely enough, but it could be.
Two defenses that are strong, but the point spread like is 51, so they are expected scores.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I think I said this last week as well, but I struggle. I have a rule to not really make picks on games that involve Jameis Winston because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, he was actually excellent against Seattle.
Oh, that's the thing. He has that in his locker. He can be a fantastic quarterback, but then the next week he'll show up and throw six picks, you know?
Yeah, so. And he didn't throw any picks, but he did lose two fumbles, one of which was really inexcusable because he just doesn't have the concept of how to protect the ball.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, and that is always the case. And while I was watching, obviously, as I told my tale of woe earlier on, my opus, I did mention that I got involved in Seattle in play, so every time he got the ball and did something good, I was like, it's fine, but eventually he's going to drop that. Or he's going to throw it to someone in the wrong uniform. He's going to do one of those two things, and I'll win the bet, which is what actually happened. Although I would say the fumble that really turned the game is not actually technically massively his fault. The other one, absolutely. Cardinals at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tamps. I don't think anyone's ever called them that.
Let's do that from now on.
But let's try and see. Game. Let's see if we can get that going. 4.5 points. I suppose, like, to be safe, looking at both sides, you'd probably take Tampa Bay at home -4.5, then Cards on the road.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. And what they've got 51 is the over under.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Yeah, I might go under on that one.
John,
51.
Tough one though, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. Talking about the under, I think, is just looking at the. I'm just breaking my own rule about making a pick on a Winston game, but still, I'll go under.
You're also breaking the rule that I brought in about you doing that clicking noise down the mic when I've got headphones.
That's
in.
The noise that comes when I think.
Now Mike's going to do it. People are going to complain. They're going to. The 9:25 game, Panthers at Packers. I would never have called the Packers a Jekyll and Hyde team, but we have to say it now because they just, as we mentioned earlier, they did not show up last week.
That was last week.
And that's got to worry you a little bit when you look at this one. Mike, we'll start with you. Carolina Panthers at Green Bay Packers, 5.5-point spread, 46.5 on the total points. I mean, if the Packers turn up and play like they did, say, against the Raiders, there's only one winner.
Yeah, and I think that this is a bounce back game for them. They're at home. 5.5 doesn't really worry me in this. I like the Packers for this. It's too bad they traded Micah Hyde away or lost him in free agency because you know they would be halfway to being a Jekyll and Hyde team.
I'm the one that makes the bad jokes. Right. We're going to have a meeting about this after this show.
Right. Only Kieran is allowed to make jokes.
I'm the one who dances. John, how do you see this one going?
Yeah, I think it could be a bounce back as well. Like, let's going into this time last week, the Packers were 7-1. Let's not forget, and they obviously 7-2 now, going on last week's result.
Good match.
Which was thanks, Kieran. But it was I think that was an uncharacteristic display, more so than a trend that we should be worried too much about. Now again. we're all aware of how much I like, where everybody likes McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey these days. It's, you can almost bank upon him getting almost two scores these days, at least one. But I think that the Green Bay Packers will have enough here. And Aaron Rodgers, he's a competitor to such an extent that he will be incredibly dissatisfied with what happened last week. So I think he'll make a big push to up his numbers.
I'm sure Norv Turner is looking at the tape of the Chargers game, because you know the Chargers offensive line is not a premium offensive line, and he'll be looking at you know what they did to get so many yards rushing against Green Bay. But I still like the Packers in this one.
Yeah, I do too. Just quickly, first thing, obviously, John, I don't think people do realize how much you like Christian McCaffrey. The multiple posters that you have in your bedroom.
It's like your relationship with Kevin Costner.
But what I will say is, with this one, obviously the news from the Panthers that came out in the last little bit was obviously that Cam Newton is on IR till the end of the season, more than likely. Mike, do you think we'll see Cam Newton in a Panthers jersey again?
It's an interesting question. We talked about it a lot when they were in London, and nothing I've seen from Kyle Allen suggests to me that he's a better quarterback than Cam Newton.
100% agree.
It may just be that they think they can run an offense better with him than with Cam, because they're going to run the offense through Christian McCaffrey, and then Allen gives them the better shot at that. Now, you know, I'm not sure that a coordinator would be better off, you know, trying to figure out a way to incorporate both guys into an offense. But I can't avoid the feeling that Allen will implode at some point this season. But so far he's been, what would you call it, a game manager more than anything else, and a very effective one, because he can throw downfield accurately. And that's what they need. It would be kind of nice if they gave him another weapon in the off season, but it's a really devastating question, because Newton's been the face of that franchise for so long.
Yeah, he's in his ninth season. He's 30 years of age now at this stage. You know, he's built to be a quarterback with 6'5". What is he? 245 pounds. I am checking his stats. I don't know him off the top
MVP
of my head.
A couple of years ago. When was that? 15 or 16 or something.
That was the year they went to the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Yeah. So it's an interesting one. I personally don't think we will see him. I think they've made a decision that he's not the one that they're going to go with.
He'd be incredibly expensive. That's the issue. And if, like, the thing is, like, Kyle Allen, we can talk about he didn't set the world on fire, but he's still 5-1 replacing Cam Newton there. So at the very least, it shows that they have the ingredients in that team that which makes Cam Newton slightly dispensable, I think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
and he's under contract for another year.
Yeah, he is.
And you could, I think, based on his contract, which was 5 years ago, I think you would get him for about $20 million, which is pretty much middle of the road for quarterbacks these days.
True, yeah.
So, you know, for some team, you know, he might be an attractive pickup for a team that needs a quarterback. It's just, you have to know how to handle him, and you have to ask yourself, with all the punishment he took over those years, you know, running the ball, primarily, but also standing in the pocket behind a not so great offensive line, you know, how much is left in him? How much is left in his arm? Because that's been the problem with shoulder injuries, right? And, you know, does he still have the big arm he had when he came into the league?
Yeah, well, the only stat that really matters, I suppose, is that wins, which, as you said, Kyle Allen has. I
mean, yeah.
That's it. It's the only stat. Ask Baker Mayfield. He'll tell you.
Thanks, Kieran.
No matter. And I was going to say something else there before I decided to insult you.
Have you lost your track of mind because you were making a Browns joke?
Making a Browns joke.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, I bet Cam Newton ends up with someone like the Titans.
That's a good shout, actually. Like that. That's a decent shout.
Sunday Night Football, Vikings at Cowboys. Vikings, we say it every week, they're a sneaky little team. They're playing well.
Yeah, I don't think they, just in this particular instance, I don't think they like going on the road, particularly to somewhere like Dallas. And I think Kirk Cousins is underperforming, and I think he'll continue to do so a little bit, particularly against the Cowboys pass rush. I think he'll struggle this week. So if you were to ask me, I'd be saying Cowboys win there by about 10 or so. Wow, very specific.
I'll get a price on that for you. Mike, if you want to have a say on this one, I'll get a price on something like 10 points for the Cowboys. That seems strong.
Do you think so?
I think they're three-point favorites, I think. And remember, they played Monday night, so they're basically on a short prep week. John's absolutely right. Minnesota does not play well away from home. They need to run the ball, and they like the conditions. Strangely enough, the conditions in Minnesota are really good for them, but they will be in Dallas as well, so that's probably not a problem. If they can run the ball and set the tempo of the game, they're good. If they can force you into a situation where you're playing catch-up, they're very good. But you saw against the Chiefs that when the Chiefs were having to play catch-up, Mike Zimmer is a one-trick pony, and that one trick is to blitz the hell out of you. Send the guys up the middle, you know, and Matt Moore was getting crushed, but he was also making a couple of plays because they weren't double teaming Tyreek Hill. And, you know, they got into field goal range twice, basically. Actually, they were out of field goal range and Butker made a 54 yarder, to tie it up before he kicked the winning one. But that's with Matt Moore and a backup. And my only hesitation here is that the Cowboys have not really beaten anybody good all season.
Yeah, it's one
except
of the
maybe the game in Philadelphia. The game in Dallas against Philadelphia. That's probably the best game they've won all season. So I just have that hesitation because you're absolutely right that Minnesota's sneaky good. They, you know, Thielen's probably out again. They brought him back too quickly, I think. So you double Stephon Diggs, you stop the run game, and you can beat Minnesota pretty easily.
Cowboys are
by
3-1,
10, then you're saying.
By 3-1. They're 3-1 at home, the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. For some reason, that Packers defeat just sticks out in my mind just because it was.
Yeah.
It was a poor performance against the team.
Well, I think I really like the Packers team this year.
But it's 2-1. What your bet, John?
It's 2-1?
It's 2-1, yeah. I mean, minus 9.5.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. Yeah. Look, we flew through a few of them there because really we want to get to the game of the weekend, which is probably the Monday Night Football game because it is the Seahawks taking on the undefeated now, the only team left undefeated, San Francisco 49ers. It's going to be a cracking one, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny this week because when you have the good teams playing there, it's hard to pick. And when you've got the bad teams playing each other, they're hard to pick. It's like last week I picked Miami to win straight up, but I couldn't bring myself to pick them against the spread, even though it was the Jets. This one, I really tend to look at Seattle in the points as a sort of safety net. Because Seattle's not as good a defensive team as people think. You know, it's more their reputation than the way they're playing. But they are a good offensive team, and they want to run the ball and control the game. And Wilson and Lockett have been just tremendous. I mean, last week they were unbelievable. You know, Tyler Lockett has turned into one of the league's really best receivers, I think. But San Francisco's got a really, really strong defense, as we've seen, and that could make this game turn into one of those can Russell Wilson pull a rabbit out of the hat again. And I think with the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, the Niners' offense is incredibly well balanced now, which makes them really hard to defend because Kyle Shanahan has them working the way Atlanta did when they went to the Super Bowl with him as the offensive coordinator. It's like you've got too many options to try to stop. And the only thing I'm looking at is if either of their two starting tackles might be back for this game because they've done all this. They're undefeated. And Staley's been out, I think, the whole season, and McGlinchey's only played one game, something like that. And to do that with two backup tackles in it is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, the 49ers run has been amazing. And one of the things that's really caught my eye is that they've done it easy at times. Like, they obliterated the Rams, and then we obviously thought that they'd beat the Arizona Cardinals by a double figure score, which didn't happen, and they had to go at bring it to the well, essentially, and they got out. So they've had hard games, they've had blowouts for themselves, they've had close games. They are putting up something good, and as we've said a number of times, to me, they've got the best tandem running back game going. In Breida and Devin Coleman, and they even got Mozart that can come in. Mozart the composer.
Mozart.
And then
and Jeff Wilson, who they will run straight at the middle of the line for no gain in any first and goal situation.
That's a trick play. That's Kyle Shanahan. That's a trick play. That's to lure you in.
But just to cut across there, Karen, but you're talking about all the offensive weapons that San Francisco have. Let's not, I mean, we've joked about him once or twice in the show, but this, I'm bringing him up seriously now, but Jimmy Garoppolo is now 16-2 as a starter. That's very over a course of a few seasons, obviously, and subtracting that time he was injured last season. But just games that he has started, 16-2, and I think that's very impressive. Yeah, particularly for a team like, obviously, they're 8-0 this year, but they finished their season on 4-12 last year. In part, I assume, to, you know, their starting quarterback going down with injury. But that's a hell of a turnaround, and Garoppolo has shown that he's able to take command of a game quite easily.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no bigger Jimmy G fan than me floating around. I know, as a very handsome and attractive man, that sometimes that, you know, when the face is that pretty, no one cares what's inside. Can't,
just saying that there's going to be a video version of this podcast at the end of the month, so let's not say anything we can't back up.
I can back it up with facts.
Yeah, it's too bad I don't have another Minshew mustache for you, kid.
Okay, moving on from my handsomeness to what we think about this. San Francisco, obviously, I think -6 is going to be pretty popular because they've been strong at home.
Yeah.
The thing about that makes me just wonder is that eventually, unless you're the Patriots, all these unbeaten seasons do have come to an end. Mm-hmm. And Seattle are just the type of team that Pete Carroll has a plan, Russell Wilson run the balls, Tyler Lockett gets a few catches. They're the type of team that comes in and just cuts your undefeated season off at the knee.
True, but San Francisco are in the situation now where a defeat is far from being the end of the world. 8-1 is still a pretty fantastic record and will guarantee playoffs guaranteed. We're talking buys and all sorts of stuff there potentially, so it'll be interesting to see. And just on that game, Kieran, what do you have the over under in front of you?
47.
That's an what do you think about that? I think you're going under, aren't you?
No, I mean, under is the safe way, but under is the boring way.
Yeah,
that's what I would, that's what I always say.
I just have a sneaky feeling that this is going to be a very high scoring game, and I don't like, I can't really, I'm not going to say any statistic right now to back that up, it's just a hunch, but I think we're talking a lot of points in this game.
Mike?
Yeah, and the interesting thing in this is Seattle have won all four of their road games. They've lost, you know, they've lost at home this year, which is very unusual for Seattle. But I don't know if that means enough to lead me to like a sneaky Seattle bet in this one. But you know, I think you can get better than 2-1 on them on the money line. Which as a sort of
10,
outside, as an outside bet would be tempting to me.
Okay, John, last word on this one to you. Do you think the undefeated season will end
for the 49ers? I think they'll. This is a great. I actually can't wait to watch this game. This is a fascinating contest between two good teams. If you're putting me on the spot, which I suppose is the kind of nature of this podcast, I'm going to stick to my guns in this one. I think the 49ers will pull it out. I just have a bit of faith in this team for some reason at the moment. I like the Seahawks too, but I think the 49ers will pull it off. It seems like Kyle Shanahan is he's really greased the wheels of that offense, certainly more so than last season. So I think the team, the offense will be able to pull it through. And again, I'm going to stick to my guns on the high scoring game. I will throw something down on the over on this one.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm going to side with Mike on this one. I do think these runs do tend to come to an end always.
Yeah.
I think the Seahawks are just the type of team that could do it.
They are. Now that's what makes it very dangerous.
Six point is the spread, but 23-10 right now, and that could get bigger. You know, because these lines do change, and a lot of the time it changes for away sides more than home sides, if you ask me. And that could go bigger. I think if you hit anything like near 3-1, 9-4, 11-4, I mean, that's very tempting on
Seattle.
Nice. So
yeah, it's nice.
We will go with that, guys. We will rock on and get your best bets of the weekend. It's a pretty tough weekend. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now. At one stage, I was looking at the Giants-Jets game. That's how bad it is for a best bet to not get shut down. That's just not.
The Giants are favorites, but you know, road favorites. Except it's their stadium too.
That's what makes me think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this makes me think about it. Like, is that like the Giants -2.5 at home against the Jets side? I mean, it's bad versus bad, but it is tempting me still. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not the one that's tempting me is another road dog this time, not road favorite, but the Bills are getting 2.5 points at even money against the Browns.
Yeah, saw that. Beautiful.
And that to me, if it was 3, I would dive in. 2.5 is kind of a teaser to lure you in. But I think the Bills at even money is a pretty good bet anyway in this game.
Yeah, I think
they can close the Browns down, you know.
I think the 5-4 there about floating around, even about them winning the game outright, isn't bad. Will I go with that? No, I think I'm going to go back. I had another one in mind, but now I've kind of gone through my head twice. I'm going to go New York Giants -2.5 playing the Jets. I think they get that done in an absolute terrible game. That, like, every time it'll go to red zone, I'll put my head in my hand and go, why did I do this? Why? Why did I do
How
this?
How about, I'll give you one other one that I'm considering. Because my best bet, actually, I might be doing a lot of over-undering this week. And the one that I like right now the most is the Atlanta New Orleans one. Even though it's 51, I think they can go over that. I think, you know, all it takes is a couple of garbage time touchdowns from Atlanta to push them over that mark. But the other one that intrigues me is the Rams as road favorites in Pittsburgh. It's 3.5, which might be a little much, but the Rams are coming off the bye week. The Steelers could barely sneak by Indianapolis with Brian Hoyer at quarterback at home last week. And the Rams are obviously a whole different proposition to Brian Hoyer. So yeah, I'm kind of tempted to take the Rams on the road here.
Yeah, that was the other one I was looking at, if I'm being absolutely honest. I know people would say I'm lying, but it was the Rams.
Yeah, I think my one would be, I'm interested in the Saints and Falcons game. What numbers do we have for that one there, Kieran? Do you have anything?
So as Mike was saying, that it's 51, but the handicap's 13.
I think that I do think the Saints will win just the actual game, so that's kind of a lock in my opinion. But I think it could be less than 13. I think that'll surprise me.
Yeah,
Matt Ryan coming back into the team as well, and obviously they're coming off a bye too.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is actually true, but my gut instinct is always when you've got a big spread, you have to take it over on the game within reason. But I mean, it's no good to think that they're going to win by, you know, they're going to win by say 13 and only, you know, and the over under is going to be 41 or something like that. Because to win by 13, you've got to score a bunch of points to do that. So that's always a kind of hedge my bet kind of thing whenever I'm looking at a big spread.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And another stat that I think people should use when they're is that, and it could have played in last week because we all picked San Francisco, but basically home sides with double figure handicaps are what major people in Vegas get involved in. So the Cardinals last week, who were +9.5, +10 against San Francisco, you would have seen a lot of money in Vegas for that.
Yeah.
Professional American gamblers like big handicaps on the plus side.
Because it's a sure thing almost? Mm-hmm. Or like that's the perspective?
It's a lot of points given to a home team, I suppose, is the answer there.
Yeah.
So you're going with the Bengals this week, huh?
I am not going with the Bengals. We didn't even talk. We are 10 weeks into the show, and that's the first time the word Bengal has been used, unless we were accidentally talking about the Bengals and pronounced them incorrectly. The word Bengals has not been. No offense to them. I mean, well, look, hey, they're playing the Ravens. I mean, good luck, lads.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking
with that.
What? It was less. It was just under 10 last time I looked. Is it? Has it gone up at all?
It is. It's still 9.5. Yeah, it's still
9.5. Yeah. So I suspect that'll probably go up a little bit in the next couple of days as people refuse to bet it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my story that I told there is what I've heard and read about many times, but I would like to see any professional American punter who's like, I'm all over the Bengals this week, guys.
You might find one or two in Ohio, but I'd say that'll be about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, even more so because they're starting a rookie quarterback, you know, his first start in the NFL.
It's just a recipe for perfection.
I'm surprised it's only 9.5, to be honest. I'm really surprised.
Gentlemen, that's our best bets. Hopefully they will go well, and lots to look forward to. The Sky games, I mean, the 6 o'clock game isn't great, but I think from then on, Sunday Night Football looks a good one, and Monday Night Football looks an absolute barnstormer of a game. It's going to end 9-6 now, will you see? thank you so much both for talking to me this morning. My thanks first to Mike Carlson, who's joined us from Stately Carlson Manor, as always, and to John Boff, who joined me here in studio.
Thanks, Kieran.
To talk all things NFL, and of course, to give us his latest updates on the Browns, which wasn't great.
Factory of sadness. We shall recommence next week.
As always, please do gamble responsibly, and this is, as well, also the start of Responsible Gambling Week. So check out the Betfair Twitter page or Responsible Gambling Twitter page for all the details there. For that, there's loads of info there. And please do gamble responsibly. It's what we do. It's what we like to talk about on the show. But we do gamble responsibly at all times. It's a major core value for us. So please do that. Thank you so much for listening. We will speak to you again next week. And enjoy the rest of your week. And best of luck with all the selections.